Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.
You're listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions, with your host, Reverend Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality with your host, Paul John Roach. It's me. Glad you're listening to my show and the other shows on Unity Online Radio Network. I'm coming to you from Fort Worth in Texas. It's not too hot today. It's quite nice. And if you are listening live, of course, this is the day where the semifinals of the World Cup are happening. So I'm looking forward to the second half. I'm going to miss the first half because I'm on this show, but there's nothing I like better than to do these shows, so it's exciting to be here. Joining me today is the author of a new book. It's called Chakra Healing for Vibrant Energy, Exploring Your Seven Energy Centers with Mindfulness, Yoga, and Ayurveda. And Michelle S. Fondin is the owner of Fondin Wellness, where she practices as an Ayurvedic lifestyle counselor and a yoga and meditation teacher. She holds a Vedic master's certificate from the Chopra Center. And so it's a pleasure to welcome Michelle back, because she was on my show a few years ago. Welcome her back again to today's show. Welcome, Michelle.
Thank you so much, Reverend Paul.
You know, there's many books on the chakras, right? What makes this one different?
Well, I think the angle that I took with this book on the chakras was the integration with Ayurvedic medicine, which is an ancient medical system from India. I also integrated yoga practices as well as mindfulness meditation exercises. So you have almost like the trilogy of practices with the ancient Indian practices. And I did that because I wanted a more holistic and integrative approach, because the word chakra can be a little bit obscure for people. They might hear the word, but they're not really sure exactly what it is and how they can integrate a practice with the chakras into their lives.
Yeah, and what I liked about it too was, you talk about integrating each chapter, which it focuses on one of the chakras. Each chapter has a multiplicity of ways of approach, right? Because you add yogic postures, you have breathing techniques, there's a meditation in there, there's affirmation, there's ways to heal, there's ways to balance, to move through blocks. So you're approaching the subject from a multiplicity of viewpoints. So whatever learning style you might have, there's something for you, you know, that you can take it into your body with the asanas, you can take it into emotional places. It's something for everybody. So it's a real workbook in that regard, isn't it?
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, and that's what I intended. You know, a lot of the Eastern thought can be very esoteric and difficult to apply to your daily life. And even in my first book with New World Library, The Wheel of Healing with Ayurveda, I also wanted to take a concept that was fairly difficult to understand and make it more applicable to daily life. And really, if you can apply it to your daily life, and it's a nice read, it kind of stays there with the nice read in the book. And I wanted practitioners of yoga, meditation, and Ayurveda to be able to really look at the chakras as an added layer to their healing, and to be able to apply that really to everyday life, or maybe working on one chakra per week, or maybe just taking one of the seven main chakras per month and saying, okay, this month, I'm going to focus on the root chakra. I really need to make that a focus in my life. And next month, I'll work on the second chakra.
And, you know, these chakras are now fairly well known in the West, aren't they? The last maybe 20, 30 years, there's been a lot, like we said earlier, a lot of writing about them. So they're not quite as esoteric as they used to be. But it's a subject you can really get into a lot of depth with, right? There's all kinds of nuances, and each chakra is linked to a certain sound, right? A seed syllable, a quality, a color, et cetera, et cetera. It's a very subtle system, isn't it? That's been worked out over millennia, I guess, because this has been practiced in the East for thousands of years, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And because it deals with the subtle body, like while the word chakra can be a familiar word, and while most people associate the chakras with the colors, they'll see chakra banners with the colors of the rainbow and the symbols in Sanskrit. I think a lot of people just don't typically know what they actually correspond to and the fashion in which they can heal with them. And I think that's the fascinating aspect is that, like, for example, if you're dealing with constipation, constant and chronic constipation, a lot of people don't know that, like, yes, you can take herbal medicine or you can take senna, for example, or work on a diet that's going to alleviate that. But if you focus on areas of the root chakra that deal directly with your problems with constipation, you can connect the two, as an example, and work on it, as you mentioned, on a more subtle level, a level that we're not thinking about typically.
Right.
So really, that's the beauty of working with the chakras, is that it's a level of working with it that's energetic in nature, more spiritual in nature, but also something that you can focus on as an added layer to working with just the physical body.
There's a phrase used in New Thought called the mental equivalent. I prefer actually the spiritual equivalent, but the mental equivalent works too. It's the idea that behind every situation or condition, you know, there is a mental or a spiritual equivalent to it. And unless we shift and understand what that mental equivalent is, we're never going to really change the condition, right? Because we're only going to deal with symptoms. And I think the chakras are a way of doing that, aren't they? Of going to the more subtle levels and understanding, why is this appearing? It's not just a symptom that I'm looking at. It's what lies behind. And you actually have many stories in your book of that exact concept, right? The idea that there's more going on than meets the eye, so to speak.
Exactly. And I think my story of how I discovered the chakras really leads to that, is that I was diagnosed with thyroid cancer when I was 28 years old. And I was really shocked with this diagnosis, as anyone is when they're diagnosed with cancer. But I thought I was living a relatively healthy life. And I knew that I didn't want to uniquely deal with Western medicine in that case, but I didn't know what else to do. And I began to do a lot of research on alternative medical practices. And in a book, I discovered the chakras. And when I really looked at it, because the thyroid is located in the area of the throat, a lot of people don't even know what the thyroid is. It's a vital organ that regulates your metabolism. It regulates a lot of the body's functions, but it sits at the base of the throat. And when I looked at the throat chakra and began reading upon the throat chakra, and it's our area of verbal expression, verbal communication, being able to express your higher truth. And I really delved deeply into it. And I realized that throughout my whole childhood and into my adolescence, I had been sick with throat problems. Like I had strep throat, chronic tonsillitis. When I was 17, I had an abscess in my throat that was blocked, that blocked my airway passages because I had mononucleosis, and I had to have it surgically opened, and then the thyroid cancer in the area of the throat. And so I had to look at, well, what is blocking this? And I realized that throughout my childhood, I had to be the good girl and not speak my truth and not speak out. And I had to make peace for the family in a dysfunctional family household. And so it wasn't until I discovered the chakras and discovered how to open up the throat chakra that I really made that connection. And I said, you know what? I don't want this anymore. I don't want to deal with illnesses of the throat anymore. And this is my opportunity to work through that on multi-layers. And so I was able to do that. And that was a real awakening for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Very powerful. You know, in Unity, our founder, co-founder Charles Fillmore came up with a system called the 12 powers, which is based on this chakra system, but he had 12 instead of 7 based on the disciples, basically, and the qualities of the disciples. And the disciple mm-hmm. that's in the fifth chakra there is Philip, you know, whose name means, you know, the one who works with horses, you know. And in the back in the day, horses represented power and still do horsepower, right? And so Philip represents that fifth chakra, which is in the unity tradition, power, the power center, speaking your truth, you know, speaking forth your and being empowered to speak. And it links in very much, I think, with that idea of the fifth chakra, right? The idea of expression and claiming you're good, because so often we don't, we stuff it. And if we do that, or we feel we don't deserve to speak our truth or whatever, and that can lead to, you know, all kinds of ailments, and certainly leads to resentments, I think, because, you know, finally we feel, well, why aren't I worthy to speak, you know? And sometimes, of course, when we do finally speak, it comes out in anger, you know, instead of coming out with empowerment, right? So these are some of the imbalances that you talk about in each chapter. You know, if you don't exhibit the chakras healthily, they will be exhibited perhaps unhealthily if we're not careful.
Exactly. And I think awareness is the first key to that. And when I had that aha moment that there might be something to this chakra system here, and that there was a consistent pattern in my life. And I believe that everyone is continually working on a specific chakra. It's kind of like the work they come into this life with. And for me, it just seemed to be that it was the throat chakra. And
right.
And there are other instances which are really interesting that we might not even think about. But if you have a speech impediment, speaking of the fifth chakra, if you have a speech impediment or a stutter, or you have a hard time speaking in public, like all of that revolves around that same chakra. But for me, it was singing, because singing was something I loved to do. And when I was 17, I had a beloved teacher of mine reject me for a show. And I held on to that resentment because I felt that I was treated unfairly, or I wasn't given a good chance. And so, again, I had held on to that. And you were talking about holding on to resentment or not being able to express yourself properly. And when I was able to heal that chakra, I was able to work through that as well. So it's kind of neat how once you start delving deeply into work with the chakras, that a lot of layers that were hidden begin to become uncovered, and you're able to heal on levels that you didn't even conceive that you could heal from. And a lot of times we think like, oh, if I don't have any symptoms, I'm fine. But healing is so much more profound than that. It's so multi-layered and multifaceted that the more you dig deep into it, the more you uncover.
Yeah, I like that. That's very true. So let's get back to basics here. In case some people out there saying, this sounds really interesting. What on earth is a chakra? Can you tell me what it is? So basically, tell us what you believe a chakra to be in the body.
Right. So we have our physical body, and then we have an energetic body. And the energetic body is, you know, it's comprised of energy and information, and it's not something that we see with the naked eye, unless if you're a psychic or a seer, as they say, that some people can actually see the colors of this subtle body, the colors of the chakras, the aura, if you will, to give a more familiar term. But there are many chakras in the body. There are 7 main chakras from the base of the spine up through to the crown of the head. The word chakra is a Sanskrit word that means wheel or disc. And the 7 main chakras are large discs or wheels of energy. Think of them as vortices of energy that are spinning. And they actually move through the body from the front to the back. Some people think that they see posters of chakras just on the front of the body, but they actually move from front to back. They start at the base of the spine and move upward toward the crown of the head. And they also comprise areas of the physical body. They comprise your emotional body as well. And also aspects and areas of your personality are within each of the chakras too. And also your spiritual growth, because of course that energy, that kundalini energy that you might have heard that in Kundalini yoga or the awakening of the Kundalini energy that moves upward, moving from the base of the spine upward toward the crown of the head, which helps to open and align those chakras to lead you toward a heightened sense of being or a heightened state of consciousness.
Right. And so the Kundalini is the energy that's sort of latent within us, but we can draw it up, right? We can bring it into realization. And this doesn't have to be esoteric either. I think a lot of people think, oh, that sounds all very, you know, esoteric, tantra and whatnot. But these are energies that we have within us. You know, everybody does, right? It's not
yes.
like, oh, it's something that you can have if you work hard and perfect yourself. This is within
right.
us. One thing I love about Kundalini is, you know, there's various channels and paths, aren't there? You know, the central pathway and then the two spiraling pathways. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of the DNA structure, you know, the double helix
exactly.
moving through. And
yeah,
the
like
idea of the
helix.
Spiral. If we look at the caduceus of the ancient Greeks, you know, the curling of the snakes up the central spine of the mm-hmm. sword. It's very much the same, isn't it? It's the same
yes,
understanding.
Yes, exactly that. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, for some people that have a hard time grasping something that isn't, you know, naked to the human eye, your cerebral spinal fluid, for example. So in yoga, we have something called the root lock or the Muladhara, for example. And it's a yoga asana that you hold the area of the perineum, the base of the spine, the area where the root chakra is. And as you're holding this during your yoga practice, as an example, you stimulate that cerebral spinal fluid and that starts at the area of the anus and moves up through the crown of the head. So if you just think of it in very, very, very simple terms, that if you can't grasp the idea of the Kundalini energy, that sounds a little bit out there, something as simple from the physical body that is an equivalent would be that cerebral spinal fluid, that if you stimulate the area of the base of the spine, you move that spinal fluid up through to the crown of the head, you have a lot more brain power, if you will. You know, you feel a lot more awake and you feel more energetic. So those are some of the things, even through a practice of, you know, just a yoga asana that can help you awaken that Kundalini energy. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about where the physical meets the emotional, where the physical and emotional meet the energetic body, where the energetic body meets the spiritual. So it's, you know, it's all interlinked and connected. But a lot of times it is starting with the physical, like doing your yoga, doing your meditation, doing your breathing that's going to help to align the spine, that's going to help awaken that energy to move up to the crown of the head.
Well, and I think just sitting up straight is powerful.
Exactly.
You know, if you're bent over, it affects you both physically and emotionally and mentally, right? You feel weighed
right.
down sometimes if you're crunched over. If you stand up straight or sit up straight, there's that movement that's a natural movement up the spine, and you feel more alive. Also, you're holding all your organs in the right place, right, instead of them all scrunched together. So
exactly.
So there's definitely, you know, well-being that comes from that. And, you know, we're always taught in yoga, aren't we, and in meditation to, you know, keep your back straight and et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
All the manuals tell us that. So, and it's not like a rigid position. It's a relaxed uprightness. I think that's important sometimes because
right.
sometimes we overdo it. You know, we sort of stand like rigid to attention. And that's not about that. It's about being flexible, but being straight. Also, the male female, right? The Ida and the Pingala, the forces
mm-hmm.
that surround the Shoshumna, the pathways up the spine, they're male and female also. And I like that idea.
Right.
That there's that integration, like yin and yang, if you like.
That's exactly it. And it's interesting. And that was one of the things that fascinated me the most when I was delving deeper into my study of the chakras is this beautiful balance of yin-yang energy, this male and female energy, the Ida, Nadi, or that's one of the serpents that moves upward toward the crown chakra, is the feminine, lunar, and passive energy, and the Pingala Nadi is the more masculine. And as such, the chakras from the first chakra through to the fifth chakra, they also alternate in male-female energies, where the root chakra starts with the male masculine energy and then moves to the second, the feminine, the third, the masculine, the fourth, the feminine, and the fifth, the masculine. So it's really neat how it balances out this beautiful dynamic dance of the yin and yang energy. And I love that because in today's society, with what I'm seeing in like the millennials, that there's this push for like gender neutrality and like equal everything, which is good for acceptance and equality. But I think that we tend to forget when we focus too much on that, like gender neutrality, there is no male, female, it's just neutral now. You know, I hear a lot of youth saying this as I have young adults at home. And I think we forget that there is this beautiful dynamic dance, that each of us has male and female energy within us, and that there is beauty in both. There's beauty in the feminine energy, there's beauty in the masculine energy, and there's beauty in the balance in that dynamic dance of both. And that when we learn to embrace these energies within us and the energies within each of the chakras, we can create such creativity and beauty and force, and in this force of nature that comes naturally, we can really, we can draw from that. We can draw from that energy. And when we start denying, like if you're a woman who works more in like a yang or masculine environment and then denies the feminine, it creates imbalance. But when you learn to embrace the strengths of both, it creates this beauty that is very empowering.
Yeah, and you talk a lot about that in your book, don't you? You know, where we are with our modern day society, which seems having a difficult time integrating the, you know, disparate things together.
Yeah.
You know, we want to go to one extreme or the other, right?
And exactly. This is
not helping us, because, you know, it's healthy to have, for instance, dissent in a society, right? You don't have to be wrong just because you disagree with somebody else. And we have to allow each part of this great fabric, the societal fabric, to be valid, right? Unless it's, of course, ultimate extremism that wants to hurt somebody. But I think, you know, we've lost the healthy discourse and the agreeing to disagree. You know, that we're demonizing everybody. And we're demonizing the press, too, you know, and saying that all the press is fake news, etc. Whereas, you know, the press is one of the great estates of our society. You know, we need a press that tells us as much information as possible, because otherwise, who's going to tell us, you know?
Exactly.
So, you know, I'm very big advocate that certainly media is not perfect, but it absolutely needs to do its work, right? And we need to not demonize it.
Yeah, and I believe that through the work with the chakras, you can learn to embrace aspects of yourself that maybe society is just not, you know, like I think society works with trends and propensities toward one thing or another thing, and it's ever changing and nothing really lasts. And what I love about these ancient practices that have withstood the test of time, you know, we're talking about the chakra system, we're talking about Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, and we're talking about even Native American medicine, or just, you know, shamanism or whatever. Like, they've withstood the test of time. And what I like about that is that these practices take you back really to the roots of who you are as a person and how you integrate with the earth and the universe and the cosmos. And it's more true, because it's solid and non-changing, because the dynamics of nature, the dynamics of the universe, that when you are in harmony with that, then you feel more grounded and you don't feel tossed about by the waves of this ever-changing society that just goes with the trends, or what's latest and greatest on TV, or what's latest and greatest in the magazines or in the media, and just changing all the time. So you feel a lot more grounded and empowered when you practice these things.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, we want to celebrate that, because those are the eternal verities that are available to all of us. And when we're thrown off by all the the chopping and changing circumstances. You know, we lose our center. I've been encouraged recently by the heroic rescuing of the children, you know, the soccer children in the Thai cave. And I believe they're all out now. This show is going out when they brought the final five kids and the coach out. And what a wonderful example that is of staying calm, you know. One of the divers was described as being cool, calm, and collected. You know, that he said, you don't want any adrenaline. You know, the fight and the flight mechanism is okay, but it doesn't work in a cave, you know. And I thought, how interesting, you know. But he was able to manifest that energy, right, that cool, calm energy. Mm-hmm. And that lack of adrenaline in order that he could be totally focused to do the work at hand. And to me, that's testimony to the human spirit and to all these wonderful forces that we have within us again, you know, that needs to be celebrated, I think. And I'm glad the kids have been invited to the World Cup and to visit their favorite soccer team in Britain and whatnot. So, you know, so that we celebrate the good things that are happening in our world, not
Absolutely.
Always the horrific
and
ones.
And I think that we just need a lot more of that, right? To just celebrate the goodness, celebrate.
Absolutely.
Yeah, celebrate the heroism and the human spirit that is doing good works, because there's a lot of that. We don't always
Absolutely.
Hear about it, but there is a lot of that.
So I'm with Michelle Fondin. We're talking about her new book. It's called Chakra Healing for Vibrant Energy. When we come back after the break, we'll look at some of the chakras. There's a whole lot of information in the book. We can't cover it all, obviously, in an hour, but I just want to cover a few wonderful parts of it. There's certain chakras that really resonate with me, and the way that Michelle describes them is quite fascinating. So we'll come back and talk about that. Also, I'm inspired by the idea that modern science is telling us that intelligence is not just in the brain, it's all throughout the body. And again, that fits very much, doesn't it, into this idea of the chakra system. We'll go into the break, listen to these messages from Unity. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
We are spiritual beings having a human experience. Welcome to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
It takes you to power Unity Online Radio. If you'd like to make a positive difference in the world, you can by contributing to this global ministry. Unity Online Radio relies on listeners like you to support our broadcasts that send our messages out to an awakening world. Go to unityonlineradio.org and click on Donate today.
Here's Eric Butterworth with a Unity Mindful Moment.
Unfortunately, religions have tended to present themselves as institutions instead of perceptions. Something you join instead of a transcendence that you experience. We've tended to believe that God works exclusively through the machinery of an institution. So it is self-evident that most persons believe that you go to church to get close to God. The fact is, if God is present in the church, God is also present in the theater. God is present, period, because God is an omnipresence, everywhere present. So you don't go to church to get close to God, but you go to church, perhaps, hopefully, to be challenged, to dig within yourself and to find that consciousness of the presence that is with you wherever you go. So that wherever you go, wherever you are, God is.
To pick up the Eric Butterworth book, Practical Metaphysics, go to unity.org and click on Shop.
Sometimes you might feel so alone with your problems, you don't know where to turn. We invite you to call Silent Unity, the 24/7 prayer ministry, where someone is waiting to pray with you every day at any hour. Listen and relax as you hear their beautiful words affirm the highest and best outcome for you and those you love. No matter what's going on in your life, Silent Unity is always standing by. Call today, 816-969-2000.
If you've been on a spiritual path for a long time, what can you read that's new and exciting? Try Unity Magazine. It's designed for the seasoned spiritual student, with in-depth articles and interviews about spiritual practices and philosophies. Our columnists share their own faith journeys and cover healing, science, and psychology, with even a little scripture thrown in. You'll read some classic authors and some new ones. Get a free trial issue at unitymagazine.org.
Would you like to experience more peace and joy in your life through A Course in Miracles? Let Reverend Jennifer Hadley support you in discovering the powerful life lessons available through this unique spiritual thought system that teaches the way to love and peace is through forgiveness. Join Jennifer every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Central for A Course in Miracles, Living the Love, Walking the Talk, to experience the healing for yourself on Unity Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Call now with your question or comment. 816-251-3555. That's 816-251-3555.
We now return to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach.
All right, welcome back to today's show. I'm Paul John Roach, and you're listening to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. And I'm with Michelle S. Fondin. We're talking about her new book, Chakra Healing for Vibrant Energy. And I wanted to talk in the second segment a little bit about the seven chakras. But where do we start? There's so much information packed into this book, right? I must admit that, you know, I love the first three chakras that to do with the body and its functioning and with survival, with sort of energy, with sexuality, with, you know, the order of the body itself. But it gets really exciting for me when we get to the fourth chakra, you know, around the heart, and then up into the fifth chakra in the throat, and then the third eye, and finally the thousand-petaled lotus at the top of the head. Because, you know, then we're drawing up into this limitless place, right? Am I wrong in more, being more attracted to the higher we go? Or I know we have to have the grounding and the foundation of the first three,
right.
but it gets exciting, doesn't it, when you're up
it
there?
Does.
In the yeah.
Yeah, and I think, you know, with you and I being in the profession that we're both in, you know, you being a reverend at Unity and me being an Ayurvedic practitioner and a yoga teacher, meditation teacher, I think that we are naturally drawn to the higher chakras. That's pretty normal.
Right, okay.
But yeah, it is more exciting because as you get more into the spiritual aspects of the chakras, you go from being bounded to the boundless. And so it is exciting to have infinite possibilities, infinite creativity, infinite awakening, and that is really exciting. But you're correct in saying that if you don't balance your first three chakras, then it can be difficult to enjoy the fruits of the higher chakras. So
right.
To reiterate, the first three chakras, which are the root Muladhara chakra, the second one Svadhisthana, the also called the sacral chakra, and the third chakra, which is the solar plexus Manipura, which means lustrous gem, those are the chakras of physical matter. And then the fourth chakra, the heart that you mentioned, is the anahata heart, source of love and compassion in the heart center. That ties together the physical chakras and the spiritual chakras. So the heart is both. It's both physical and spiritual in nature. And then the throat chakra, the third eye chakra, the crown chakra, so the Vishuddha, the Ajna, and the Sahasrara chakras are all the chakras of spirit. So we have our physical, the heart that ties them together, and then the more spiritual chakras. But of course, each one of these chakras also have aspects in the physical body as well. So yeah, those are the seven. And when you're referring to the spiritual chakras, of course, you're speaking of the top three.
And when you were in the second chakra, you know, I think you had a good discussion about sexuality, you know, the fact that, mm-hmm. you know, in so many ways we do a disservice to ourselves in Western society, maybe American culture, you know, because we commodify our sexuality or we make it about libido and lust and desire rather than about the joy that it is, right? The balancing of that. And,
yeah,
you know, we lose sight of, you know, we pornographize a lot of stuff instead of seeing it as a joyous coupling.
Yeah. And I think that in American society, I think today, you know, we have a very changing way of looking at things throughout time. And I think in certain time periods where we grow in our thought process, we grow in our spirituality. And in other times, I believe that we kind of move backward before a next leap of growth. And I think that in today's society, in American society, what we're seeing a lot of is a lot of first and second chakra problems, where specifically with our problems with addiction, and we see the opioid addiction in the United States, we see alcohol and drug addiction, we see people being prescribed pain medications just like they're candy, and we see the problem with obesity in this country with people overeating.
Right.
And all of that is tied to that creativity chakra. That's all tied to that sexual chakra. And you even mentioned, like, even having, like, addictions to pornography or addictions to sex or addictions to sex symbols and sex status. And these are all excesses of that second chakra. And what I relate it to give you, like, a childhood reference is just, like, Pinocchio when he goes to Pleasure Island and he overindulges. But I think it's just an ailment of our society where we're seeking something else. We're seeking that pleasure. We're seeking that satisfaction and the escapism from pain. And so we overdo it with food, with drugs, with alcohol, with sex, with TV, video games, internet. We just overdo it. And because we're looking for that spiritual, we're looking for that boundless, we're looking for that unbounded joy that can't be found in objects. It can't be found in earthly pleasures. We can certainly enjoy earthly pleasures, and that's fantastic, and that's great. But it's the excess of it that we're trying to replace spirituality with things. And I think that's where a lot of imbalances lie in today's society.
Right. And I think this, the third chakra also, the chakra of, in the unity system, it's the chakra of order, you know, of balancing. Mm-hmm. And it can be willful or willing, right? Sometimes our sense of having to have it a certain way is overly controlling of our world rather than allowing. And so we move from willingness to willfulness, you know, to forcing it to be a certain way. And it's tough sometimes to let go and allow the natural harmonies of the universe and of our bodies to I love the name Manipura because it's that sacred gem, right? That jewel.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus talked about this, you know, where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. And sometimes we see our treasure in controlling things, in trying to make it a certain way. And therefore we become controlled ourselves, you know, by our addictions, by our need to be right all the time. The real jewel is allowing the light to shine through it, right? To release it so it can be its own beauty. And when that happens, there's something transformative occurs, it seems to me, you know, when we can allow that beauty to express.
Yeah, exactly. It's about owning your personal power. And in the chakra system, that Manipura chakra, the third solar plexus area chakra, it's about owning your personal power and moving forth within that personal power. And like you said, not being aggressive or not being pushing to make things happen. Because when you push to make things happen or you try to prove yourself right all the time, oftentimes we create more obstacles rather than the allowing of our personal power to shine through. And with that presence, with that beautiful, luminous presence, that you inspire others. And that's what can happen when you own your personal power.
You mentioned earlier that, you know, that there's so much to learn in each chakra, and even the blockages are actually learning points, aren't they? If we see them aright. And I love that idea that nothing is there to condemn us. Everything is
to help
us, right? To free us. Yeah. And I believe that's so important, because sometimes in a simplistic worldview, you know, we want to get rid of all the nasty stuff so I can have the good stuff. But really, the nasty stuff is our greatest teacher. You know, the nasty people in our lives are the ones there to help us the most. And the reverses, you know, as in your own personal healing story, you know, the reverses can teach us something deeper and more wonderful. So everything's for learning. I love that idea about the chakras too, that wherever we are, you know, there's the learning opportunity, right?
Right, exactly. And it's about appreciating that opportunity to be able to grow and have that personal growth. And some people ask me and have asked me, and even in interviews, like, well, am I being punished because I constantly have to work on this one chakra? Is this something like bad karma? And, you know, sometimes it could be, if you believe in that Indian philosophy of karma brought forth from previous lifetimes, it could be karma, but it could also just be like the divine's way of guiding you into a way that you need to go versus the way that you're going. And through these challenges, I look at them as like challenges to overcome. Through these challenges, you uncover something that you never thought that you could uncover. And I equate it to, like, I just moved to California, as I mentioned, and it has not been an easy move. It's been a wanted move. And I felt that God was leading me to this move in every way, shape, and form, but it hasn't been easy. It's been really difficult. It seems like every step we take forward, we encounter 10 more obstacles.
Right.
But if you look at something like childbirth that is painful and hard and long and laborious that women have to go through to have a beautiful baby at the end, you know, it's very similar to that when you are faced with these challenges and you push through and you're able to open doors and move through this, that you'll have something beautiful at the end. So it's not about just everything being happy and easy all the time. It's about learning through the process.
Well, I just wrote a poem the other day called The Seamless Robe, and based on Jesus's seamless robe, you know, the idea that they didn't tear his robe apart, they drew lots for it because they understood its value. And whereas in a lot of, you know, Old Testament history, that when something went wrong, everything got rent in two, you know, they tore their clothes. And I love that image, though. It's the idea that we recognize there is something seamless and whole within us, even in our most difficult times. And the Christ, if you like, the spirit within us, reminds us, you know, that we live a seamless life. Then the seamless is beyond life and death. It's beyond reverse, you know, happiness or sadness. It is in all its fullness. And once we recognize that, it's a transformation. In fact, you've got a great quote here from Leo Buscaglia on the chapter on the heart chakra. It says, "When man has love, or woman has love, when we have love, he is no longer at the mercy of forces greater than himself, but he himself becomes the powerful force." I love that, because when we shift our focus to the inner resource, then we become masters of existence, right? Not in the sense of controlling existence, but allowing existence to flow through us. And then we become, you know, extraordinarily powerful, but not with our own power, but with the power of the joyous universe in us.
Yes, absolutely. And there is power in that. And when we realize that we are not in control, we are not in control, that we are vehicles for the divine to express itself. When we realize that, when we truly realize that, then we don't become so wrapped up in all the obstacles and difficulties that we face. Because, like, I know for certain that I don't live for myself. I live for God. I live for Jesus. Like, I live for something greater than myself. And the only way to be joyous in life is that you realize that, because when you think you have to do everything by yourself, even self-healing, like without divine intervention or divine purpose, like you feel alone. And I know people that just they consistently, and I work a lot with people in recovery from drugs and alcohol, and the one thing that when I've interviewed people in long-term recovery from drug and alcohol addiction, that they said, without realizing a power greater than myself, I could not heal from this addiction of drugs and alcohol. And that across the board is 100%. I've never met a person in long-term recovery that has said they've recovered without embracing a power greater than themselves. And so that just goes to show you that, like, how powerful that is.
Well, and that's the genius of the 12-step program, I think, mm-hmm. you know, when it was created, is that it doesn't limit the higher power, right? It's God as yeah. we have come to know him to be. I mean, that could be anything.
Right.
So it could be love. It could be a spirit. It doesn't have to be a certain way of thinking about God, you know, and I love that. It's open-ended.
Yeah.
Whatever the higher power means to you at any given time, you know, sometimes mm-hmm. it can mean just something a little bit higher than where you are right now. Other times it's the ultimate magnificence of you know, the transcendent wonder of God. But, but I think that's all that's important, isn't it? It's not like we have to understand everything. It's just we have to be open to a degree that is higher than how we were open yesterday. You know, just a little more opening, you know, can make all the difference.
Mm-hmm.
So on the sixth chakra, you know, obviously Jesus had studied the chakra system because he said, didn't he, in one of his script, in one of the Gospels, he says, if your eye be single, your body will be full of light. And you talk about the sixth chakra and the quality is light. But I've always loved that actual quote from Jesus there, because he's talking about when you bring the seemingly disparate together, right? When duality becomes unity, then everything mm-hmm. shines with light because you're no longer diffused. You know, you're no longer seeing things, in yin and yang. You understand that yin and yang form the perfect circle. And if you look at the yin yang symbol, you'll see there is that integration of the two, right, in the harmony of the one. So I love that idea. And that is the power, isn't it, of the sixth chakra?
Yeah, it is. It's transcendence. That's the beginning of transcendence. And some people have a really difficult time embracing this concept of transcendence and exactly what it is. And when we're on this earthly plane and bound by the gunas, as I mentioned, the gunas are like the qualities of earth, the qualities of the elements of space, air, fire, water, and earth, the qualities of yin and yang, we're bound to the ever-changing. And when we move up to the sixth chakra, the third eye, the center of intuition, and the quality of light, we transcend the confines of all the earthly elements, the earthly plane, and we move into the spiritual that is boundless, that is limitless, that is timeless, that is spaceless. So we move into that space, and that doesn't mean like you're a monk sitting in a cave meditating 24 hours a day. It's that you realize these moments of transcendence. You realize in your body, mind, soul, the integration of who you truly are, that you're a spiritual being having a human existence, as Pierre Teilhard de Chardin had said in a quote. And so you realize this, and you have moments of perfection. You have moments of transcendence. You have moments of feeling that you're one with the divine. And that is absolutely beautiful to experience that.
And then we reach the final chakra, right? The thousand-petaled mm-hmm. lotus, as it's sometimes called. Every week for years, my late wife would offer a meditation at Unity Church in Fort Worth, and it would be based on drawing up the energies through the spine, you know, and connecting to the thousand-petal lotus, to the infinity of the universe. And I remember how wonderful each of those meditations was, because she went right to the heart of things, you know, drawing it up through that place. And I love the phrase, the thousand petal lotus, because it's like it's the opening, isn't it? The lotus is in the mud, mm-hmm. but it's not besmirched by the mud. And in the same way, we are in the human, but we're, as you said, with that quote from Teilhard de Chardin, we're not limited by the human. There's a spiritual link that is always pure, you know, always free.
Yes, absolutely. So we embrace the beauty of both. And that's what I love, is that you know you are reabsorbed into universal consciousness. You know that you're a part of that. But the beauty of that is that you are also a part of this earthly plane, and you get to experience the beauty in that too. And I really believe that, like, Jesus is the perfect example of that, because Jesus was fully human and fully man, and he was able to benefit in be both and experience both. And I think that there is no greater goal than to be able to embrace that and follow that pattern. And then when you do, you realize fully what it is to be integrated with the divine, but also to, like, come back and be like here now, be here and enjoy every moment of your life, even the challenges, even the beauty, even the change in life. And you're able to, with full consciousness, be aware of that. So that's where we are. When we move up to the seventh chakra, we can move back down into the other chakras and embrace them with full awareness.
Well, I think that's important, you know, the integration. There's a famous quote about St. Teresa, you know, that somebody saw her eating some partridge, you know, with gusto and in the refectory in the monastery one day, and they were shocked, you know, that she was enjoying it so much, because she should be praying more, you know, not enjoying food. And they confronted her about it, and she said, listen, when I pray, I pray, and when I eat partridge, I eat partridge. In other words, you know, I'm full on. I'm living my life to the full here. I'm present to whatever's going on, and because I am inherently free, you know, I've made that connection with the divine. Then I'm not addicted when I eat my partridge. I'm just enjoying the pleasures of it for that moment. That I move on, right? And I think that's the key, isn't it? You know, you could still come back down into the world and do whatever you need to do. But it's no longer an impediment to you, right? It is simply a joy to do what you do, and you can move through it with ease, right? But sometimes people misunderstand that and think, well, that person doesn't seem so spiritual. They're enjoying just regular life too much, you know?
Right, exactly. No, it's just, I love the sense of feeling grounded in that. You can embrace fully, be a spiritual being that you are, and then live life. And that's a very Zen Buddhist way of being. You know, it's where you can get joy and fulfillment from something as simple as washing the dishes or sweeping the floor, and then be completely present and grounded in who you are. And I believe that the misconception in the modern world, in the Western world, is that if you're on a spiritual journey, that you become a different person, you totally deny who you are. And that's really not what an awakening is. That's not what spirituality is. It's being who you are in an awakened state.
Right. I think Pema Chodron, the Tibetan Buddhist teacher, was talking about the nature of the Buddha. You know, the Buddha was neither male nor female, could be anybody. And a little child said, well, would the Buddha wear toenail polish? And Pema Chodron said, yes. And I think it's the same idea, right? Just because you're a Buddha doesn't mean you can't, you know, do something that is seemingly of this world, you know. Why not? Right. You know, unless it's a problem for you for some reason, you know, it's just part of being human. So you can be fully human and fully divine as Jesus was. We've only got a few minutes left, so I want to turn the spotlight on you, Michelle, and ask you, what would you tell our audience today that would help them go through life, you know, in all its prickly moments and difficulties? What advice or what wisdom would you impart?
You know, I always say, like, this too shall pass. I don't know. That's a mantra I kind of live by. You know, this too shall pass. It's not like when you're looking at life from the divine perspective, it's that, like, everything that you encounter in life, whether it's an illness like cancer or death in the family or not having a job, that it's everything is for your good. And there is a Bible quote that says, you know, God works everything for those who love him and are called to his purpose. Like, everything will work out for your greater good, and just, you know, living by this too shall pass. And so I love that, because for me, when I'm encountering difficult moments, I know that this is not permanent. This is not something that I need to be worried about, that I have heaven that's looking out for me, and I have guardian angels that are looking out for me, and that is so for you too, that you are perfection in the eyes of God, and so, you know, there's nothing to worry about.
Excellent advice, and it sort of brings me back to thinking about those rescuers of the children in the cave again. You know, the idea that at one point they were saying it may be 4 months before they could get them out, and then that turned out not to be true, and they're out in a couple of days or a relatively short period of time. In other words, nothing's impossible, right? We think that we have limits on ourselves. Oh my goodness, it's going to be awful. And yet miracles can happen, and I think we have to know that's the absolute truth. If people want to get hold of your book, it's available in all the usual places. Published, of course, by the wonderful New World Library. And I believe if they want to contact you or find out more about you've got a website, right?
MichelleFondinAuthor.com.
Is that what it is?
Yes.
And that's FONDIN, Michelle Fondin, author, one word, .com. And we wish you well in your move to California, and you'll be doing more wonderful work there, I'm sure.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Paul. I really appreciate it.
Let me tell you about next week's show, folks, and then we'll say goodbye to Michelle. Next week, Dr. Richard Katz joins me. And he's going to talk about his new book. It's called Indigenous Healing Psychology. And we talked about that. We referenced that earlier in the show about the wisdom that is in all the world's faith traditions. So Richard has done a lifelong study of indigenous healing practices and psychologies, honoring the wisdom of the first peoples. So that should be a fascinating show, delving into their wisdom and what they have to teach us today. But I want to thank you for listening to this show and all the other shows on the network, but especially my show, World Spirituality. Thanks for tuning in. And we look forward to seeing you next week. And thank you, Michelle. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IamDivine2022.